Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey everyone, welcome to Two Out the First. It is June the 19th, 2024. I'm Ryan Ballinger. It's great to have you with us. We've got plenty to talk about on today's show. We've got some movement or lack thereof in the PGA Tour and Saudi Public Investment Fund negotiations. We've got some known changes that are coming to the signature events next year, and those were voted upon yesterday in a meeting with the PGA Tour Policy Board. So we'll get to all of that today. Happy to take your questions on our live stream. Happy to answer them, whether you're watching us through Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter/X, YouTube, Caffeine TV, wherever you're catching us today. We're happy to have you with us. Or if you're listening after the fact, you can catch us on your favorite podcasting platform of choice. All right. So first thing of note, there is no deal between the PGA Tour and the Saudi Public Investment Fund that's been announced. There had been reporting out there from last week at the U.S. Open, courtesy of Alan Shipnuck, who is now writing for My Golf Spy these days, at least covering the U.S. Open and the Open for them. I don't know if day-to-day writing is, but he's covering it. The major championships on the men's side for them for the rest of the year. And he reported down in Pinehurst, hey, you know, industry sources indicate there's a deal that's imminent. There could be an announcement made on Tuesday. And Tuesday came and went, and there was no announcement. And obviously, there have been some finger pointing back at Alan. I'm not pretending to know his reporting, and he's a guy who doesn't typically miss. And of course, there could have had a bad source, could have had someone who indicated negotiations were further along than they actually were. But Jay Monahan comes out today at the Travelers Championship. And because he is a Boston guy, I feel like he always kind of shows up to the Travelers either to see old friends or just kind of be back at home, so to speak. But he was at the tournament, obviously was at the policy board meeting where some other stuff happened that we'll talk about. And he came out and said, look, there's no deal. Reporting about there being a deal is definitely lacking context. It's definitely lacking an understanding of the process. Jay Monahan has this tendency to kind of say a word salad, and that is what it is. That's kind of what the PGA Tour Commissioner's legacy has always been. Not just Monahan, but Fincham before. I'm just saying a whole bunch of words that really mean nothing. It don't tell you anything other than that nothing's happening. And I don't think nothing is happening, but that there's no headline here to take in. The headline is not, hey, there's a deal, or there's an outline of a deal, or, you know, someone threw out, I forget what some of the reporting was, like there was a signed version of a draft, like, you know, signed drafts, that doesn't happen, stuff like that. So the way that it sounds to me is that Monahan's saying, look, we're making progress. We have made progress. They had a meeting in New York pre-US Open. They've had this meeting here. The negotiations continue, but there is a complexity to this deal that is just not understood by probably people in my line of work, but also just people in general. And I think that's true. I mean, if you think about the volume of things, and we've talked about this on this show at different points in the last year and change, of there's a lot that goes behind this deal, right? The PGA Tour has PGA Tour and its umbrella of tours. You've got all of that to figure out. How does LIV continue to exist, or does it not at all? What does that look like? How do you integrate the basically half dozen players on LIV who still have status? What do you do with the others who have none? What happens there? Is there any valuation to the LIV Golf League, to the LIV Golf teams, to the LIV Golf media deals? Is there anything there that they bring to the table that makes it other than kind of a sunk cost for the Saudis? So I'm sure trying to do their best to recoup some of the billions they have already put into this, because if they're going to invest in PGA Tour enterprises, then here comes at least a billion, if not 2, 3, 4, whatever that number is, but beginning with, you know, ending with billion on it coming into the PGA Tour enterprises investment. And if you assume that they're going to match Strategic Sports Group, and I don't know if that's a fair or unfair assumption, but if you assume that, then that's $3 billion, right? Now you're into golf, if you're the Saudis, for like $8 to $10 billion, So at the latter stages of this negotiation, you're probably going to try to squeeze as much juice out of this as you can from that big investment you made in LIV that could ultimately turn out to be worth not that much, depending on how this goes. There has been some insinuation out there that the Saudis are still trying to do that in the back half of this, and that maybe a lot of other stuff is decided. And maybe that's true. I'm sure there were a lot of kind of commonality points that were hammered out in the kind of framework stage of this a year ago. And a lot of that could be very easily checked off and re-agreed to, or you know, I's dotted, T's crossed, all that type of stuff. But there's still going to be some hard foundation issues on the table that, unless they've got those sorted out, that's going to be the sticking point. And I think we kind of just went over those. And then you have to figure out, and then there's kind of the people who have thought, okay, the deal's done. Let's extrapolate from there what they could do with this. Do they go, well, I've seen situations there, as soon as the deal's done, they're going to buy the Ryder Cup for the PGA of America. That could actually happen, sure. But do you know how much money they make that the Ryder Cup makes the PGA of America? It's a lot. And if they were to get paid off on that, maybe it's more like if that were to happen, and I'm not insinuating that's going to happen, but let's say that happens, then I would assume the PGA of America would much rather sell off a percentage of their stake in, you know, in the American side of this, and then continue to reap some of that money moving forward instead of just selling it all off today. And you could say, if you think that the Ryder Cup's valuation has peaked, it hasn't, then you might want to get out. But that kind of wild level of speculation, I think, is assuming a whole heck of a lot is going right with this. And for Monahan to kind of come out and say, look, we're not there yet. Like, and publicly say that, we're not there yet. Send out a memo to players, we're not there yet. We're making progress, we're not there yet. You know, all that, putting those feelers out there, hey, this is not done. And after all the months and maybe a year of saying we're not going to negotiate in public, that is maybe not directly negotiating public, but it is a form of negotiating in public to say, we are not done. If you think this deal isn't as complex as it really is, you have a misunderstanding, you know, those types of things. So I think the takeaway from here is there is no deal. It's probably going to be more complicated than the reporting suggested that it would be done by Tuesday, or an announcement made Tuesday or Wednesday or whatever. It could take a while. And I know there's a lot of eye rolling and groaning on social media. Why is this still going on? Why is this continuing to happen? Why are we still talking about this? And the fair point, right? But it sounds like the negotiations really didn't begin in earnest until March, February, January. Like, they basically took 6 months, didn't do much of anything. And then at some point, one or both parties decided, hey, we should get together if we're going to negotiate this thing and start figuring this out. And I don't know if, my guess is the ROM deal was the catalyst to start that negotiation and then ramp it up as you go. And then the March introduction after the players in the Bahamas from the players to Al Ramayan, then that started to accelerate it a little bit. And then now you get Rory on the transaction subcommittee, that started to maybe move it along a little bit. And now here you are. So this isn't a clean and dry, simple deal for these folks. And I'm sure there's still going to be pushback from players, from the kind of, I don't like, the mule term is funny, but it's not particularly respectful. The rank and file is not particularly respectful. The broad base of the membership is probably going, hey, what's in it for me? How am I going to get cut out of this? Are we welcoming these LIV guys? Are there going to be 50 more players on this tour now because all of them don't have exemptions on the PGA Tour? What is that going to look like? And am I going to be iced out of the big money? Because that transitions to our second topic. We're going into our third year of whatever you want to call these. Signature events, designated events, elevated events. I feel like they've settled on signature events because that makes it sound not quite as obviously putting the other events on the schedule on a second or third tier. But the signature events are relatively new phenomenon, right? This year, they had signature events with no cut except for the player or player's family hosted events, right? Tigers, Jackson, Arnie's family. Those had cuts to the top 50 and ties. And I didn't see anything to suggest that a cut would or wouldn't be permanent. Maybe they're still studying that, or maybe I missed that entirely. But there are going to be some changes for next year that we do know as a result of the policy board vote last night and then a memo out to players. And Sean Zach's been over this side of it. Rex Hager's done a good job on the memo side of it. So, you know, those guys are out there most weeks on tour. So to the stuff Sean reported on around the time of the U.S. Open, pre-U.S. Open, the board did approve a permanent exemption for Tiger Woods specifically to play in any signature event he wants moving forward. Any of them. He's in all of them. Whatever he wants, he's in it. And I find that very interesting because depending on how it's worded, and assuming it's just, hey, this is for Tiger Woods, that's a weird thing, right? The PGA Tour has never created an exemption for one specific player without creating a set of criteria that really only describe that player. So is that criteria going to be literally, hey, Tiger Woods, the exemption category is the Tiger Woods category. If you are named Tiger Woods, you are allowed to play. And if that's the case, I think that's kind of interesting because he's a 48-year-old man, right? He doesn't have many more years of professional golf. And yes, it would be great to have him play the signature events as they are spaced out and as he chooses to play them. But he could also take advantage of this well into the future. So maybe you put is there a time limit on it? Is it until he's 55? This kind of stuff is like nerdy but interesting to me of, all right, in concept, having Tiger invited to every signature event makes a world of sense, right? At least economically speaking. It takes a spot away from somebody, but I could live with that, especially in Tiger's case. But it also, at the same time, continues this over-reliance on Tiger and this over-reliance on him as a name draw that you just have to watch and that we have to have, and he's the needle mover and it's, you know, stuff like that. And it delays the inevitable. And it feels like the third time, fourth time in the last decade that the PGA Tour has delayed the inevitable of Tiger Woods not being the number one draw anymore. And I think you could argue now he is not the number one draw. But then again, I saw him for 2 days at Pinehurst and walking by people who were watching him for the first time, they talked about him in the way I heard people talk about him 20 years ago when I was attending tournaments in college and somehow got a credential to cover him. It's the same. It was the same, like, oh my God, that's Tiger Woods. I've never seen it. Like that guy's awesome. I can't believe I saw him. So he is still a huge draw. Scottie Scheffler's great. Rory's great. Probably the two biggest name draws on the PGA Tour right now, right? I don't think nothing against Xander or Colin or Victor or Patrick Cantlay. They're great players, but they are not. You're not buying a lot of tickets to go see those dudes play. You're going to go see Scottie and Rory, maybe Spieth. I mean, Spieth is a draw, quite a draw. And then Tiger if he's coming to your town. So, yeah, I get it. But at some point, the tour has got to say, look, Tiger, thank you for your service. Thank you for 82 wins. Thank you for whatever you're doing now on the board. All that type of stuff. Making us a ton of money. Making all of us a ton of money. But we need to move on. And you, by hook or by crook, need to be a more ceremonial player. And that be the end of it. And ripping that Band-Aid off is going to be extremely difficult for golf, for the tour, for everyone involved. But that day is going to come eventually. And having this lifetime exemption out there for him to potentially really just play Genesis, Bay Hill, and Memorial. Is he going to go play Travelers? Is he going to go play in Hilton Head? Or is that what the expectation is? Because he has said explicitly, hey, if I'm healthy, I could play once a month. And even then, he looks exhausted. So if he's playing once a month, you're looking at February, that event, right? You're looking at Bay Hill, but not the Players, I guess. And then you're looking at, you know, the Masters in April, the PGA in May. Maybe you get them for Memorial, so you're asking them to play two a month. That's a difference. And then that's it. So maybe you get them, and then obviously you're going to try and get them to play the U.S. Open if he wants to take those exemptions. And he's been kind of sullen about that since missing the cut at Pinehurst. And then he obviously is going to play the Open because that's the one he thinks he can win at nearly age 60. So that's his schedule, right? Like the once a month stuff, it works except really for June/May. Like that, he's going to play three times between May and June, I suppose, if he plays Memorial. I mean, on one hand, I'm fine with it, the other. It's like, all right, Can we move on from this? It's time to move on from this. So there's that. Then the other thing that's going to happen to the signature events is they're going to have a minimum 72 player field next year, and there will be an alternate list to make sure that anyone who pulls out gets replaced in the field. Because now we have, with McIlroy not playing, we had 72 players, 36 groups of two, very easy, nice flow to it. Well, now that McIlroy's out, Chris Goddard is going to play by himself for 2 days, and then someone else is going to play by themselves on Saturday and Sunday, depending on scoring. And they're going to go out first, and they're going to get to play in like 2.5 hours. And on one hand, that's great for Chris Goddard to have gotten broken through on the PGA Tour, gets his opportunity to be in a signature event, makes some guaranteed good money. You're basically getting $50K no matter what, more or less. But you're going to play by yourself for 2 days. How does that feel, important or special to be out there? All right, Chris, get on out there. We'll put you on the clock. See how fast you can go. Good luck, buddy. I don't think that's it either. So everybody should have a pairing partner. There should be a minimum field. I would like to see it closer to 78 players and 72 players. 72 just kind of feels like too short. And the PGA Tour events over the last 10, 15 years that have been no cut events, but have like a regular field of them, like the Zozo or the CJ Cup before it became the CJ Cup Byron Nelson. Those events had 78 players. I think that's a better number. That's the number they use on the Champions Tour. That kind of makes sense. 78 players is the one I think you really, really want here. Now, in my perfect world, you'd actually have like 90 players and you'd have a cut, a legitimate cut. And it could be the top 65 in ties. If we're doing the top 50 in ties and anyone 10 shots of the lead thing, what's the problem with having 90 players in and a cut to the top 60 in ties or 65 in ties so that hardly anyone gets cut, but there's still some consequence to it? I think that's a better way of doing this, but that's where they've landed. That's what they're doing. I guess the questions moving forward are, how do you space these out? You assume that they're going to keep the same ones, right? But what happens to Wells Fargo? We have not heard anything about a future sponsor for that. What's that going to look like? Is it going to remain a signature event? Will another tournament step up? Are these things more or less permanent? There's been that insinuation that these things are locked in, even though after the first year we thought, oh man, these things are going to rotate. How cool would it be to have the schedule rotate and like 1 year John Deere is a signature event if they want to put up the money? I think that would be great. I wish they would do that. I also wish that they would take a great event like Travelers that was great and very enjoyable as a full field event, and take that event, take Heritage, make those just regular events again. You know, the full field events are cool, and let them off the hook for the $20 million. My idea has long been, since this idea was announced, of a signature, elevated, whatever, take these events, take two or three of them, and move them around. Treat them like semi-majors and go to markets where you don't typically have a PGA Tour event. And you could have the series sponsored by somebody. Maybe that's something that happens with the PIF deal. But even if the PIF thing never happens, you could have a sponsor come in and say, hey, we're gonna sponsor the signature series and we're going to have it move around. And this year it's going to be in name three cities, like have one in Boston and have one in Charlotte, North Carolina, and have one in, name a Midwest city here that doesn't have a tour event. You know, pick places that don't typically have events, move it around, treat it like a major, get huge crowds, people lose their crap, have a really good tournament, make it feel super special. Because the way that it is now for the events that aren't the player hosted signature events, you know, those ones already kind of have a special feel to them. But for the ones that were regular events and now are signature events, they don't feel better. To me, they feel slightly worse because you're like, hey, we just cut off 60, 70, 80, 90 guys from playing this week so that you have a $20 million tournament. And you would still have that same loyal crowd there regardless, because these are places where the PGA Tour does really well. The Hartford crowds are awesome. The people come out to TPC River Highlands. That tournament's well-run, well-supported. As long as you get a decent field, they were coming anyway. It's a place to have a good time. Same thing with Hilton Head. Very well-supported tournament was 132 players. It would still be the same way. But if you were able to take the signature events and move them around to different locales every year, make it special, you could really sell it. You could sell this thing as its own package if you really wanted to do it. But you can make it a unique, interesting, different series that I think that the PGA Tour is kind of missing out there. Or you could do it for the FedEx Cup playoffs. Take your pick. You could do it for both. I feel like the Tour tries so hard to kind of root itself in places. And the thing I think that makes, outside of the Masters, the major special is Pinehurst just had the U.S. Open. And then I'll tell you a quick story. So I was in Costco today with my wife. She's off today. And we went to go pick up contact lenses. And a gentleman saw the shirt I have on, which is the U.S. Open t-shirt I bought. And he said, "That's a really great shirt. Did you go?" And we talked about it for a few minutes. And I don't even know if he's a golfer. He's an older guy. He said, "Oh, well, my personal trainer went down there for a day. He said it was incredible. I really want to get down to Pinehurst." So it was special for this guy because he went to Pinehurst, the personal trainer. It was special for the client because he knows somebody and he got to see the place on TV. Everybody wins there. Like Pinehurst wins. People are going to go book to go play Pinehurst even more now. It's a worthwhile investment for them. For the U.S. Open, it's great because it moves around. You go, "Hey, I get a chance to see a U.S. Open near me at a special place." If you're at, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, you're making money. It's coming out ahead. The PGA Tour could bid this stuff out. Truly could bid this stuff out. Almost like an F1 race kind of thing. And say, "Hey, we want to come to your city. You got to give us killer treatment like it's a major, and we'll create a little rotation of these." And it would do gangbusters. It really, really would. And it's a business decision I am surprised they have never made before. I know that doesn't have expressly to do with the signature event changes, but that's something I think that's been a huge swing and miss on these signature series. And I get that they're young. So this year three coming up. But if they move these things around and just had the Tiger, Arnie, Jack ones as the ones that are kind of posted up, I think you've got something there that's pretty special and cool. All right, that's going to do it for us today on the show. Thank you so much for watching live, listening after the fact, watching after the fact. Really, really appreciate it. This will be our last live show this week. Tomorrow, I'm going up to Sunny Hannah Country Club up at Johnstown, Pennsylvania, home of the Sunny Hannah Am, one of my favorite places on planet Earth to go play. I didn't get to play there last year. It's the best national membership in the world, but going up there to play. So we're going to try to do Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday live shows, and then Thursday, Friday, we'll do just kind of tape into microphone audio only shows. So if you want to catch those and you're watching now, subscribe to your favorite podcast platform. We won't put those out on the streaming services. And then we will come back with shows, live shows next week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. And then we'll try and keep this formula going. I would like to do the show around 10 a.m. Eastern, but I do feel like this kind of like 1, 2 in the afternoon is not bad either. So next week might try a little bit earlier in the day, like 10 a.m. and see how that goes viewership-wise. But would love your feedback about that. When's optimal for you to watch? I want to try to catch as many people as possible because we're doing it 2 Eastern time. It's a little bit better for the Western coast of the United States, but not so necessarily great for folks if you're watching in the UK or Ireland, and those things can happen too. So give me some feedback about that. Appreciate it. Ryan at thegolfnewsnet.com, Twitter, Threads, X, Instagram, and Blue Sky at Ryan Ballingy, Facebook, YouTube, Ryan Ballingy Golf. And Golf News Net on every single one of those services is our handle. Thanks so much for watching or listening. We'll catch you next time on 2 Off the First.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.